Welcome to The Hockey Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief. Brought to you by the Chicago Wolves.
On Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago. Listen now in HD on our app and on ESPN 1000.
Ready for the power play?
You're listening to The Hockey Show
on ESPN Chicago.
To the Hockey Show podcast with the one and only Barstool Chief. I am Pat Boyle, and we are still stunned.
We did it.
Ecstatic. I was very happy for you and all the long, hard hours you put in on Tankathon.
I was getting cramps in my fingers from doing that Tankathon.
Willed
it into existence.
It just is incredible. Hawks win the NHL lottery for the first time since 2007. They'll have the
that one worked out.
First overall pick. That worked out just fine. And they will indeed select Connor Bedard in Nashville on June 28th. Let's just start with this initial reaction. You were at Barstool River North with some Hawks fans.
Some Hawks fans, our friend, mutual friend, Scott Darling. And I went in with very low expectations. If you look at the chart, you do the math, you know there's like a 78% chance of picking somewhere between third and fifth. And so I had written it off. It's like, you know what? They didn't tank hard enough. They're not going to get it. I'm not going to disappoint myself with something that would be statistically almost impossible. So it was, you know, kind of went in nothing to lose in a way. But at the same time, everything to lose. Because if you don't get this type of player, your rebuild has a ceiling. Now, the ceiling, there is no ceiling. You can win a Stanley Cup with a guy like Connor Bedard because you need those true superstars, and that's what he is. And I would say that, you know, people are always like, oh, how good is he? He's probably the top three of my life in terms of prospects between McDavid, Crosby, and Bedard. And to be able to get your hands on a guy like that, 17 years old. So he's still only 17 years old. It changes everything.
It absolutely does, and I'm with you. I went into, we did a post-lottery show at 7:30 on NBC Sports Chicago Plus because the White Sox game was on the main channel, and we had a show set up to discuss if they got the third, fourth, or fifth pick because in all likelihood, like you said, 78% chance, what have you. Well, obviously, all hell broke loose at 7:20 or whatever it was when Bill Daly, you know, announces the way it went down, that the Hawks had the first overall pick. But as you're watching, from your vantage point, the lottery as it was being checked off 11 through 4, it was all chalk.
Yeah,
you love that. And you were like, and you're sitting there going, all right, nobody has shot up.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody, obviously, would be able to drop if everything is going to chalk. Then when you get to the Sharks at 4, you're like, all right, top 3.
Yep.
Now, we do have the Kevin Weeks slip up, and I'll get into that
in just a second.
In
real time.
Yeah,
because
you were at a bar, right?
Too much commotion going on at the bar. Scott caught it, and I thought he was messing with me.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is not the time to joke around.
Yeah. And it blew up on social media, too. So everybody caught it and kind of had the commercial break to kind of
digest what's going
expose
on.
It, so to speak. Well, when you look at it at that point, I was trying to think, like, is that valid? Am I really do I believe what I hear? And if you look at the lottery odds, they only had a 7.8% chance at that third pick. So, in essence, they had a much better chance for the first or the second pick once you knew they were top three.
Well, and especially once all the other teams and all their numbers, that gets folded in, right?
Right.
So all the other teams that are four through whatever have been eliminated. So now you're in this mode where it's like, all right, you have a very good chance, which I didn't know until you told me that just now, that the odds kind of flip once everything goes chalk all the way up to three. And all I said I wanted was in the top two. I wasn't going to be greedy. Like, Fantilli's going to be a fantastic player. I would not shed one tear if they got two instead of one. But getting one, the thing about getting one to me is that we get to have fun right away. And I don't know if Fantilli will be in the NHL or not. I know next year, I know Bedard will be there. I know it's going to be worth it to go to the United Center. I know it's going to be worth it to tune in, stay up till, you know, midnight for a game in Seattle, because you might see Connor Bedard do something that nobody else on the planet can do. He's that special, and it just feels great to want to go and care about the Blackhawks. And there is something that, you know, when this team was good, the whole city buys in.
Yes.
And it felt like that again last night, where everybody, you know, I was in the bar, but social media, everybody's buzzing, you know. And
the non-hockey fans were into it last night, because I'm surrounded, just like I know you are.
My boss bought season tickets. Yeah. Big Cat bought season tickets, like, on the spot. Section 122, we'll see everybody there.
So it reminded me of the D. Rose night when Steve Shanwall, I think they pronounced him Stan Shanwall that night.
Well, didn't they have like a 1.2% chance or
1.7
something?
1.7 or
8. Yeah.
And he's like, representatives are standing by, and he gave the number. And on our post game, I'm just like, what? We should know what the number is.
You're right.
And within 90 minutes, it was $2.5 million. As we tape this podcast on Tuesday afternoon, late afternoon, it's over $5 million, $5.5 million, something like that.
So
in sales
for winning the lottery. For the Blackhawks, it's actually winning the lottery.
It is winning the lottery.
It's like cash and everything else.
And here's the thing. If they get the third pick, they get a little traffic yesterday, but nowhere near.
I don't know if they do.
No, yeah.
Because whoever you're taking third,
that's where the draft starts, right?
Yes.
That's where the Michkov debate begins.
Yep. Will Smith, all those kind of guys. Carlson. But any one of those names isn't coming over for 1, 2, Michkov, maybe 3, maybe never. So I don't think it's getting the buzz. Even if you get Fantilli, I don't think that there's going to be this buzz. It was Bedard or bust in terms of like the immediate reaction ticket sales thing. And he has performed, like, I feel like we've been hearing about Bedard since he was 14, with Crosby. And the only place that I feel like the majority of sports fans in America see a guy like that, because no one's watching junior hockey, is in the World Juniors. And he lit up the World Juniors and broke all those records and was going viral with these insane highlights. Like, I posted the one where he won the game against Slovakia in overtime, and it was just like, who is this guy?
Right.
And I think it caught everybody's like imagination. So you remember the highlights, you see the name, you know he's a phenom. And when your team gets him, it's like you're right back into 2010 again. And that's how like the energy around the team felt last night when that pick was announced. And still today, like you said, $5 million. So in ticket sales in less than 24 hours, that is absolutely incredible.
Hey, want to put a bow quickly, and we'll get a lot of Bedard talk in here on the Kevin Weeks slip up before the commercial break. So they announce at 4 that the Sharks have the 4th selection. Bill Daly, deputy commissioner, does that, and the way, because you were at the bar, the way it had been going is Weeks had a little one-liner after each pick. Mm-hmm. This is the, you know, 6th time the Sharks will pick in the top 10 since 2010.
Okay.
Whatever,
yeah.
You know?
Yep.
And there was one little nugget. So they announced the Sharks, and then he says, this is the first time somebody has fallen.
Oh.
And so that means it's
line.
One or two.
Yeah.
It's between the Hawks or Ducks for the number one pick overall. We'll be right back.
So was this like almost like a Ron Burgundy moment? Like he read the teleprompter, just made a mistake?
So that's what I tried to investigate today. Okay. So through some of my contacts in Canada at TSN, I first of all asked, you know, what'd you think of the whole situation? There was a debate between the NHL and ESPN of who would host the show.
Okay.
The NHL, and again, they're doing this for their partners in Canada. Weeksy was on in Canada doing this, and he was obviously on ESPN doing it. It's a simulcast situation. So it's agreed upon by both parties. The NHL and TSN wanted a host doing this. ESPN wanted Kevin Weeks. So ESPN won out, and Kevin Weeks, who's an analyst and a great analyst at that,
definitely,
and a ton of contacts,
been
breaks,
around forever,
been around forever, great energy, great for the sport,
great on TV,
fantastic,
yeah,
he's electric,
very stylish man too,
yes,
dresses great,
yes,
yeah,
but he had a moment, and it felt like he was reading off prompter much of the night, and maybe kept reading past where the commercial break started. Another contact I have in Canada said he heard that it was just an ad lib on the Columbus stuff done by Weeks. So maybe he knew that this was on the horizon and just kind of, it just was. And that's kind of when you got a player playing out of position, right? An analyst who's used to being teed up and has to just talk about Bedard or talk about Fantilli or what the needs are of the Oilers or whatever the case may be, they're ready for that. When they've got to adjust to teleprompter and this and that, it's a different skill set. It's a different muscle.
It's kind of like you and me when we do the radio. I don't know how to get us in and out of breaks. I'm not aware of the clock. I will talk forever. And you're like, hey, we got to stop. We got to go to commercial. So I would not be able to do that. If I was in Kevin Weeks' shoes, I would have messed it up because I'm not used to that.
So that's kind of some of the details behind that.
Yeah.
I'll get into the conspiracy theory thoughts a little bit later on. Let's get to the man of the hour who is going to turn 18 in July. What type of player are they getting in Connor Bedard? 5'10", almost 185 pounds, has excelled at every level, playing with, you know, I heard he's a man amongst boys, but he's a boy amongst men and has made them look silly.
Yeah, and I reblogged your clip from Kane when Kane interviewed him and talked about the BioSteel thing and the things that he does.
Who did he look off, McDavid?
McDavid on a 2-on-1. And if, when you watch, and Army talked about this too, Arm Dog, Colby Armstrong, the way that he moves, he's so good laterally, so good on his edges, and he just creates space. And Army was saying, like, everything that he does, and Bedard was explaining this to him, is like, every little movement I have is just setting up the defenseman. And that one against Slovakia, you could see it where he just, like, he has a little shoulder move. He opens up one of his legs so it makes it look like he's going somewhere else, and he cuts back the other way. So he's always creating space for himself. And all he needs is 6 inches because he has that little toe drag, whippy release that just goes bar down or wherever he wants it to go. He's invented a new way to shoot the puck.
Yes.
That's really what it is. And he plays.
He enters the league with arguably the best shot in the league.
Nate McKinnon said that. So Nate McKinnon, who is, to me, one of the best 3 to 5 players in the league. He's unbelievable. Nate McKinnon looks at him, and they all do this BioSteel camp. It's like, that guy's release is the best in the league. So that's where it's like the excitement comes, because normally you draft a kid 18. We'll send him back to junior. We'll send him back to college. Or he'll come in, and he'll struggle. Maybe he gets 20 points, 30 points. The thing that Bedard does well and does it at his best, the things that makes him special, that will translate right away. He's only going to get better from here. But if you're talking like point totals for a rookie year, I don't think it's inconceivable to put him at 70, 80 points, because he's going to be able to get himself in space. He's going to have all the power play time, and he's going to be able to create those angles. And you cannot teach that release. He's going to be fooling goalies and defensemen, and there will be bumps along the road, and there will be learning curves and all that, like every young player. But he will have special moments, and he will be productive at 18 years old.
I thought the World Juniors was the litmus test for me to see how he can handle the pressure of that stage, the pressure of playing in Canada, the pressure of losing and losing ugly in their first game, and this guy kind of having to will and carry the team to the finish line. And, you know, his puck skills are elite. He's above average as a skater. His shot is, we just said, by Nate McKinnon's standards, the best in the league entering the league.
Yeah.
His compete level. That's the other thing. You know, we're looking at the Stanley Cup playoffs right now, and we're looking at the Austin Matthews and all these different teams that have these star players. Not all of them are willing to play within the dots.
Right.
That is not the case with Connor Bedard. He is able to make defenders miss. Like you said, the wiggle. He doesn't need a lot of room to do that, and he's not afraid to take it to the paint.
Right.
And that's what you need in the second season of the NHL, the Stanley Cup playoffs.
That's a great point, too. And that is something, the thing you said about like the above-average skater, I think he's a very good skater. It's just like he doesn't have McDavid speed. He doesn't have, like, he might not pull away from people, but the way he uses his edges and moves laterally, he creates so much space that it mitigates some of, like, you know, a lot of guys, McDavid, people who are burners, they just lower a shoulder and go around you. He's not going to get by guys in that way, but he's still going to get by guys because he is a tremendous skater. It's just not, he's not a burner like a Marian Gaborik was like back in the day flying through the neutral zone, but he's still like an elite skater.
So I want to get to the shot and part of the reasoning of why that shot has evolved into where it is right now. And you and I, because we're nerds, a couple of months ago, we were here at ESPN 1000, and I pulled up a TikTok video that was a TSN or Sportsnet piece on him, right? And it has a tie to Chicago. Don't quote me on the age. I want to say he was 13-ish.
Yeah, I think that's right.
He was supposed to come to Chicago for a tournament. Kid grew up in Vancouver. And he broke his right wrist, okay, at a time where there was question about the growth plate, and, you know, it was really important that he did not use that right hand.
Yep.
And, you know, this, we're talking about a kid who was out in the backyard. Now, there's not the opportunity for a ton of space in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. It's almost like San Francisco where it's like rolling and you don't have big parcels of land and the weather doesn't agree to it.
So outdoor,
it's like street hockey, inline skating, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Shooting every single night. People next door think they're doing a remodeling to the house. But anyways, they do surgery. They put the cast on the right hand. They say he can't use it for 3 to 4 months.
Don't you touch it.
Don't touch it. He understands that, but he's not going to stop shooting.
Right.
So what does he do with his left hand every single day, just like he had been doing the previous however many years?
One-handed.
He goes out there one-handed shooting wrist shots. And they show in this video, and we can both tweet it out so that you can see this, because it first of all,
it boggles your mind.
You realize how difficult it is when your top hand on the stick at the top is how you could create enough leverage to lift the puck the way this guy does.
You ever tried shoveling snow with one hand on the shovel? Right, it's like impossible, right? You need to get that leverage. And how he does that and able to do it. Now, he does have like a very like whippy stick. He's got like a 60 flex, which I don't care. It's got the lower toe kick. But it's no one has ever used that.
No.
And it's in that way. And he plays with a long stick too. So somehow he's able to, like, it's too long for his body under normal circumstances, but he gets this reach. He reaches out as far as he can. And then he's still able to get enough torque on that stick somehow because of the wrist action that you're talking about, where it's ungodly. So you combine that with the long stick, the flex, the toe kick, and it's just bang. And it's just, it goes off the bar and it's super accurate, super hard. And it's impossible to stop because you have to respect all of his body movements because guys lunge at him and then he just goes by them because they're trying to get out in front of that shot because it is so lethal. So all he has to do is fake it and then he's by it for a better opportunity. There's nobody like him that I have ever seen that plays the game the way that he plays. It's truly a unique skill set.
So in retrospect, the injury to his wrist, he took a negative and made it a positive, because once he got the cast off, his dad, and by everybody's accounts, his own account, his shot went to another level.
It's like that old movie, The Rookie of the Year, where the kid breaks his elbow. He just ended up pitching with the Cubs because it heals in a way. He throws 112.
Right.
And it's like, that feels like Bedard, where he broke his arm at a young age and now he shoots it. Unbelievable.
And so beyond the generational talent, you've got this drive, which I love.
And that was the thing from that video that I love the most.
The Hawaii story?
The Hawaii story, he was like, hey, I'm going to join a league while we're on vacation.
How about that?
Yeah.
So quickly on that, the family's going to go for 10 days to Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
He hears there's an inline hockey league.
Yeah.
And
he's like 12 or 13.
Yeah, he's 12 or 13, and he says he's going to join it. They bring his hockey bag to the airport, and the person from the airline said, I've been working for this airline for 18 years. Nobody has ever brought a hockey bag to Hawaii.
Not a lot of youth tournaments going on in Hawaii.
So, again, this is how he is wired.
Yeah.
This is not hyperbole. This is what the kid did.
Right.
And
it was like his parents didn't even really encourage it. So they let him do whatever he wanted.
Right.
And the dad, the mom and dad, they show him having this kind of funny exchange where the mom's like, I didn't really know if I wanted him rollerblading, stick handling all through the house and breaking vases and things like that. And the dad, I thought it was like a very like a parenting thing where he's like, he has this fire in him, just an internal self-starter. Let's not put any handcuffs on that. Just let him be and see how much he'll do it. And now, to this day, Armstrong was saying to me earlier today that he goes to the rink by himself for like 6 hours a day just because he likes it there. He's working on things and he's in the gym and he's shooting pucks all day long. He's a very the way people describe him reminds me of like that mentality. I'm not saying he'll reach these heights, but like that competitive self-starter, Tiger, Jordan, Kobe, like that
Kane,
like that kind of a wiring where it's just like, I will put the work in.
The one thing I've noticed in the many years I've been in this is you assume that everybody that's in the pros absolutely loves everything about what they do.
Mm-hmm.
There are different degrees of love, right? There's guys that are gifted that want to punch the clock. They want to take the optional skate, stay at home, whatever the case may be. There are the others. We mentioned Kane, who is going to go to Florida and bring a line mate and try to, hook up with Matthews and try to go to Daryl Belfry's, super mega summit of elite players and pull from this defenseman and take from that center. And
always learning, getting better.
And I get the idea that this is kind of the cloth that Bedard has been cut from.
And it seems like that, too. And this is like, a little personal story, but When I was playing prep hockey, we had a kid, Pat Cullity, who had committed to BU at 15. And the other teams, everybody knew it. Everybody was giving him a hard time every single game in his ear, extra dirty with him. And he just had to fight through it. They'd be like, Jackie Packer, the old legendary coach of BU, there, he's going to love that, huh? And Bedard's getting that 100x every single game. And you would see, I remember a play early September, a guy was in his face and gave him a little whack, and Bedard just ran him right over and then let him know about it. So he has like that little bite to his game too that you need, which, you have to prove yourself, especially when you're a smaller guy. Crosby went through that too. And Crosby, he ended up just being like he was a tough guy to play against. And he would fight every once in a while, but it was like, I'm going to earn my respect here, and he plays hard. And I think Bedard is going to be that guy. And I've like, through people I've talked to, I'm now convinced that he's a center too, that he's strong enough through the middle. He makes enough plays through the middle. Like you said earlier, he's willing to play in those dirty areas between the dots and in front of the crease. Like he's going to be able to be that number one center. I don't think he's going to have to kick out to wing. So now it's just filling out the rest of your roster.
You might also see at times his line mate take the draw for him. And he starts wing at the faceoff and then, goes back to the duties of a center.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the expectations for him are through the roof.
Mm-hmm.
I feel somewhat comfortable that he's going to hit these expectations because he's done it at every stage well above the years he should be doing it. That being said, it's sports. We never really know how things are going to play out.
Sure.
I guess the expectations that folks have in Chicago for him it's not going to exceed what he has been experienced in Canada for the last 3 years.
It's probably worse in Canada.
I would think.
And it's like people will be aware of him. He'll be on all the billboards, all the commercials. Like the marketing department is probably thanking their lucky stars too. Now that they have a guy to build around from that perspective, and their job's done. $5 million or whatever it is in ticket sales. So congratulations, you guys.
No longer drive what Kane and Taves drive. No, drive what Connor Bedard drives.
And he's driving the bus. He is that guy. And I got his page up right now. 100 points in 62 games as a 16-year-old. This year, 143 points in 57 games. That's almost 3 points a game in one of the hardest leagues in the world. The WHL, it's not an easy league. So and he's doing it, nothing against his teammates, Regina wasn't exactly a good team. It's not like when you watch...
No, they weren't a good team.
They're right. And so he just carried them. Imagine what he will do with ultra-talented players just like him.
But he's going to be on a bad team next year.
Sure.
So it's going to be similar to the Regina situation where, and that might be nice to dip your toe in the NHL that way, where you're not this, you're adding to a ready-made contender and all the pressure of like, well, you better take him to the finish line. You know, that's not the case with this team.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be, but like no matter who he plays with, and I do think the Blackhawks will sign some veterans. I know, like, they had talked about bringing back Domi. If it's Domi or if it's Reichel or whoever, you know.
Could you see Domi, Bedard, Reichel?
100%.
I kind of like that.
I think that'd be a great line. And that could be, you know, your guy that takes the draws
exactly.
for you, too. And
a guy who, if someone takes added liberties with him, I want a Connor Murphy or somebody else to step up, but...
Don't be surprised if they make a run at Lucic or Reeves or something like that.
I would think that makes
sense. That's on the radar for sure.
Yeah. So let's get to who do you surround him with? And you got to have someone to kind of police the situation because he is the franchise.
Yeah, and I think they will. I think that's a no-brainer, and this is not like a meatball thing. Like,
no.
The Blackhawks will sign a heavyweight type tough guy. Like I haven't had one, I feel like, in a while. But they're gonna get a guy like that who can skate a regular fourth shift and give him a little security and some freedom out there. And I think that's a very appropriate thing to do. If you look at like the free agent list, I feel like there's a guy that I've loved forever. He's having a decent playoff run, Tomas Tatar. So he's available.
Is Bertuzzi available?
From Boston? I don't believe so. Let me pull them up. But this is like another thing too. So we can look at the free agent list, but I do think the Blackhawks will weaponize that cap space as well.
Yes.
And they'll be able to get a guy who might be making $3-6 million that another team is trying to get under the cap, who's a good player, who would be a nice complimentary piece to Bedard. But the only reason the Hawks are interested in picking him up, I'm trying to pull up Bertuzzi right now, would be to pick up an extra asset. So they get a draft pick or they move up to, hey, we want to move up to 14 or what, I'm making up the numbers, but we want to move up. We'll give you nothing, but we'll help you get under the cap.
Yeah, and I think
we'll get a player back. So Tyler Bertuzzi, yes, is a unrestricted free agent this coming summer. So that's a potentially nice
piece. And that's the other thing, too. You're going to get the player who wants to come here because it and they'll probably do it at a shorter term to get that payday.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like kind of probably what Max did this past year. Hey, I'm going to come, have a really good chance of playing with Kane, going to put up some serious numbers. Now I'm making a playoff run with Dallas. I probably just earned myself a decent payday.
Yeah, and I think the Blackhawks now, even more than last year, they are in a position where they can intentionally overpay a guy like that just to get him in here. They can outbid teams by $3 million, and they might have to just to hit that cap floor. So they'll be able to spend aggressively on short-term deals that don't preclude them from taking a run at a guy like Sebastian Aho or Matthews, should they become available as unrestricted free agents, summer of 25.
Yeah.
So, I think it's summer 25, right? For those
I think
two,
it's 24,
or is it 24?
Yeah, it is
so 24. whatever that time frame is, like when those guys become available, I think this could, you know, it could be like the same kind of model as before, where you fill out your roster with a Brian Campbell and a Marian Hossa because you have the cap space, you have some of your great young players on those cheap rookie deals, and you go and get like the stars, the established stars, to insulate the rest of your young core. And all of a sudden, you're right there again. And it's an amazing thing to think about.
So listening to you and kind of processing everything that we've... I feel like the rebuild has been cranked up a couple notches. It's been expedited to a degree. But how much do you think it's been?
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely not a playoff team this coming year.
No.
So this is going to be a young team. And like Bedard is obviously turning 18. But I think Korchinski makes the team. I've been told he'll have every chance to make the team coming out of camp this coming year. Kaiser's probably going to be on the team. Vlasic's going to be on the team. So those are effectively three rookie defensemen, half your decor, and then they're going to play with, you know, Seth Jones and Murph and who knows.
Maybe Caleb.
Oh, and yeah, maybe Caleb. And then who is the guy that they signed back? Tenorti. Like, Tenorti will be in that mix. You know, he's got a contract. Yeah. So, and he's another tough guy, you know. Yeah. So if you're looking for some protection for some of these young guys, that there's some value in that and some leadership in that, with having a veteran, you know, three veteran guys and three rookies. And so there's going to be some bumps along the road. They're probably going to be one of the worst five teams in the league again, but they'll be fun.
Yeah.
They're going to be a lot of fun.
All right, let me ask you this question. It was clear, and Kyle made it clear, you know, front offices tank, players, coaches don't. Mm-hmm. And that's the way this thing played out this year. Going into next year, are you, because you got Bedard and seemingly with your pick around 19 that you might be able to move up because of the 4 second-round picks you have or
and the
package that... Yep. Like you said, weaponize the cap, take bad contracts from other teams who are up against the cap, and move up to, you know, like I have a feeling they're going to have 5 to 6 players that they target in the first round.
Yep.
And it's not going to be like who's best available on the board. They're going to go after those 5.
Right.
Within reason.
Mm-hmm.
And if they hit on that, is it necessary to set up a tank team next year, or, you know,
I don't think it'll be an intentional tank like it was this past year, but I think it's going to be, they're going to be so young, and then there's only so much they can do in terms of bringing in veterans. So maybe bottom five is, you know, if Bedard is as good as I think he's going to be. But having 3 young defensemen like that, and they're still going to have the goaltending issues, they're not going to be a legitimate playoff contender. They'll be picking in the top, call it 7, okay? So you're going to get a fantastic player if you're picking in one of those places. And now that you have
Bedard, And you got Tampa's first.
They have 2 first-round picks each of the next 3 drafts, plus, I think, and 2 twos next year, and I think maybe that's it. But and then the 4 twos this year. And on top of that, it's not like they – don't already have a top 5 prospect
pool. That's the thing. They're going to have, at the end of this draft,
they're number 1 already.
They're going to have the number 1
easily.
Yeah,
like,
right.
They could only get Bedard and they would go from 5 to
That's
1.
That's true.
So they're going to be in a very good spot. And I do think getting Bedard might change the profile of the type of player you're looking at for the rest of those 5 picks in the first 2 rounds. Where, like, I think I've said on this show, I love that Gavin Brindley from Michigan. He plays a lot with Fantilli. He's a spark plug 5'9 type of guy. But if you have Nazar as a piece and you have Reichel as a piece and you have Bedard as a piece, you probably don't want another sub 6-foot speedy guy. You want to fill out, you want to have, from a roster construction standpoint, you probably want to have more of a power forward look, because the only guy that kind of fits that model right now would be Colton Dock in the program. So you get some bigger boys, some guys who can play down the middle. And I think that they'll, like you said, they're going to target some guys, and it's not going to be like, well, this is the highest rated guy on our board. It might be 2-3 spots down, but it's like, this guy fits for this role that we have for our vision of a cup champion team. And that's probably the way they need to think now, because Bedard changed the equation. If without Bedard, you probably just take the best players available and hope for the best. Now it's like, we know we have this cornerstone linchpin guy, so we can really start to be more strategic about the types of players we're bringing in.
Yeah, and again, we talked on earlier in this podcast how just his talent is going to be a calling card, and it's going to bring in free agents that you didn't, up to 3 days ago, you would never been able to touch.
Nope. Yeah, and this, again, like I personally, if I was Davidson, I would not be looking to make a splash. And not that there's really any splash guys available as UFAs. It's, you know, if you look at the top point scorers who are going to be UFAs, it's Alex Killorn, it's Patrick Kane. I think that ship has sailed. I know people keep asking for that now, but I think that's gone. I really do think Tomas Tatar is an interesting choice. Jason Zucker would be an interesting choice. Guys like that, where you could be like, hey, like someone's offering you, you know, 4 years by $3 million. We'll give you a 2x6. So the money's the same. You're free agent again when the cap's up, and you get the, you know, and short term deal. Then we'll see where we are.
And your numbers may be better.
And your numbers may be better because you're playing with Connor Bedard. So they're going to have some options there. I like that Michael Bunting, the guy who's been really good for Toronto. He's a UFA as well. They're another team that's got some cap issues. Would be nice to kind of steal him after we gave them McCabe and Lafferty at the deadline and had to eat a little bit of McCabe's deal, right?
Yeah.
Pretty sure. Mm-hmm. So you know what? Now, because of that, we're going to take Michael Bunting from you. Slide him somewhere in the top nine as a forechecking, you know, guy who can put up some points. I think what did he have? He had 23 goals this year. So like they can get guys like that second, third tier type guy on shorter term deals. And then again, and you know, like I don't hate the idea of Radish playing with Bedard either. Like they have a couple of guys that are not like. Not horrible, and they have
Kurashev,
good offensive instincts. Like, and I have this vision of Reichel using that speed, pushing people back, creating space for Bedard, and like that line. I wish, you know, whether it's Domi or whoever they end up putting over on that other spot. I think those two, like in at least in my head, make some sense together from a chemistry standpoint.
All right, so we're both on cloud nine.
Yeah.
There's really not a wet blanket out there that's going to be able to
there's one
to call me down. But you know what, Chief? I saw this before the draft lottery last night. There's a lot of Blackhawk hate out there.
I love it.
And, you know, part of it was the three cups in 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
Part of it is the off-ice stuff that has gone on. And it's not unlike what the Patriots experienced, right? You know, like jealousy is, you know, it happens.
I think I'd probably be mad too. To a degree.
Yeah, I would.
Or it would be rooted in jealousy.
So let's talk conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you've been hearing about it all day long. So mm-hmm. have I.
Yeah.
I'll start with you, because you are sort of a conspiracy theory guy by nature.
Yeah,
so I feel like this is in your wheelhouse.
I wouldn't say I'm a conspiracy theory guy. I'm a connect dots guy. It's like, hey, something doesn't look right there. Something stinks about that.
Right.
And
so does this stink?
No, I don't think so. And I don't understand. I don't think it's a good made-for-TV production like that way they do it. There's some drama to it, certainly. But give me like the ABC 7 late night lottery ball machine where it's just they just have the numbers come up, and there's been videos out there of Bettman just reading the different balls as they go, like this number is, you know, I made the shirt 45913. That was the Blackhawks number to get Bedard. That's the thing that came up. Just do it live with the actual lottery ball machine instead of doing this sequester. So there's no.
All right. So because I did a piece on the year that the Bulls got Derrick Rose, okay? And it's handled in the same manner that the NHL does.
Yeah.
So about an hour before the TV show, in Secaucus, down below the studio, the accounting firm that's overseeing the
like
NHL.
Yeah,
you know, multi-billion dollar accounting firm.
Yeah.
You've got representatives from every team in there. In this case, they also had NHL reporters. Like Frank Saravalli was in there. So already, if there is this not on the up and up thing going on, we got a lot of people that are in a room that are either in on it or no one's raising a red flag on stuff. To go back to the D. Rose situation, the representative for the Chicago Bulls was one Brandon Faber. It was his last duty with the Bulls before he went to the Blackhawks. Of course, now he's on with the Bears. And so, you know, if he had to go to the bathroom, they took his phone. You know, you're in this room, and they basically do the show minus the host, and they pull out the different combinations of balls, and they tell you right then and there, and everybody in that room stays in that room until the TV show's done an hour later. But they were there to witness it.
Yeah.
So I did text a member of the Blackhawks.
Okay.
And I said, who was the representative for the Blackhawks in the pre-lottery show? And they told me they did not send anybody. So they went with just the accounting firm, the reporters that were in the room, the NHL, other teams had representatives. And that's, I mean, how many people, and like, here's the thing, where do you stop at the conspiracy theory stuff? Why are the Leafs down 3-0 to Florida? You know?
Yeah. I mean, we're going to have a conference final that's going to be Seattle, Vegas, Carolina.
Yeah. And why are the Rangers out?
Yeah.
You know, like, where does it stop?
Yeah.
Especially in a league where Power play goals are everything. Power play opportunities are everything.
Yep.
And if you really wanted to make a have a discrepancy in power plays, you could do it
easily.
Yeah. And you know, by the way, I look at the Stanley Cup playoffs right now. I mean, do you like seeing Colorado down? If you're
nope.
the league, no,
no. You want it to be, and the players would be in on that too, because they don't want the small market teams in there, because that eats into their escrow. So they want the big teams and the big stars. They get all the ratings, and they sell the most jerseys and sell the most tickets at the highest price. That's what everybody really truly wants, because that's how you create the most hockey related revenue. And that's not the way it's playing out. And the way that the draft is going, I do think that they should just do it live, you know, the old yeah. Bill O'Reilly, just do it live.
Do it live.
And instead of this way, but, you know, it doesn't, if you really think it's a conspiracy, you would think, I would have been like, something stinks here if Arizona won it, because their Bettman is, that's his baby, he wants to keep him there, get the funding for the new stadium and all that. But I just don't think it's, I just don't think, especially given the circumstance where you're saying there's all these eyeballs, I just don't think it's possible. It's not like it's the frozen envelope Patrick Ewing thing.
Right.
Fishing around a bowl.
All right, let me go over the last few draft lotteries.
Okay.
And the team that finished last and where they ended up picking. Okay. So obviously the Hawks moved from third to first, and the Ducks moved from first to second in yesterday's draft. Montreal last year, they were the worst team, and they kept the first selection mm-hmm. overall. The Devils went from fifth to second.
Okay.
The previous year, 2021, the Buffalo Sabres had the worst record, and they had the first selection overall, and they took Owen Power. The Kraken moved from third to second, and they took Matty Beniers.
Mm-hmm.
In 2020, the Rangers moved from eighth to first.
All right, so unrelated but small point. This is why it's so, you had to be both bad and lucky at the same time, because the Rangers were bad. They got the luck, but then they get Lafreniere, who's like fine. He's a third
line
guy.
Wondering.
Right. Well, yeah, but he's not a Bedard.
No, right.
So if you have to like time when you're going to be terrible perfectly, and it's like all the stars have to align to get a true franchise changing guy, because picking first doesn't guarantee anything necessarily.
In 2019, Devils moved from third to first, took Jack Hughes. Mm-hmm. That worked for them. Rangers moved from sixth to second, took Kaapo Kakko. And
the
Hawks went from 12 to 3 and took mm-hmm. Kirby Dach. In 18, Buffalo had the worst record, and they had the first selection overall.
Do you remember the drama of that one?
No.
They have the video of the lottery machine. The Hawks ball was going up to get the number one pick, and out of like left field comes the Buffalo ball, knocks it out of like, it's spinning like this in the tube to go up to get the number
I
one pick.
Remember that.
Oh, I'll send it to you. And the Buffalo ball knocks it out, goes up, they get Dahlin.
And in that 18-year, Hurricanes went from 11th to 2nd. They took Svechnikov.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 2017, the Devils moved from 5th to 1st, and Flyers went from 13th to 2nd. So it has happened.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, a lot of times, like in 2016, the Leafs had the worst record, and they had the top pick overall, Auston Matthews.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then there were other years. Edmonton moved from 3rd to 1st. So,
yeah,
I will say, as I read these, a lot of big market teams are the ones that are moving. So I
that's just the way the cookie crumbles sometimes. I don't know what to make of that. But I mean, Carolina, they moved up big. They're not a big market team. New Jersey, who cares in New Jersey? They're the third team in that market.
That's true.
So really, it was just the Rangers moving and the Flyers moving, and neither one of those years had a bona fide. I think the Flyers got Nolan Patrick. I don't think has ever really played. So, and then Kakko, no. Lafreniere, meh. You know, Kakko's fine. Lafreniere's, you know, they're not like what you expect from top two picks. So it just happened to work out in the Hawks' favor. That's just the way it goes.
It's changed the juice around this team. There really hasn't been for the last several years. And, you know, the one thing that, even with a bad team, you and I were both like, well, I can still watch 88. And before, I can still watch DeBrincat do his thing mm-hmm. and all this. And then you're kind of like looking at when those guys leave, you're like, all right.
Buddy Robinson. Now,
yeah, Buddy Robinson.
Thank you, Buddy Robinson, because if he didn't score that goal to beat Pittsburgh, they wouldn't have been picking third. And somebody
if Johnny Toews scores on that breakaway.
You just never know.
You never know.
Yeah.
So now we've got what looks to be the second coming. And
if the stars are aligning.
And it's just like, it's, even though it's going to be tough sledding next year, mm-hmm. it's going to be fun to watch this
It'll
guy.
Be so fun. It'll be so fun. And even like I was up, I'm such a nerd, but I was just laying in bed laughing, watching highlights. And I'm like, all right, I've done 20 straight minutes of Bedard YouTubes. So let's flip over to Korchinski. And Korchinski has some moments where it's just like, man, like he's special too. And they're just going to have like these guys that cycle in. And then at the end of the year, who knows, maybe Nazar signs and he's in the lineup. And I'm very excited to see a full year of Lucas Reichel. Like they're going to... It's going to be fun. It's going to be bad overall. You might. I feel like they're going to lose a lot of games 5-4, and I'm very okay with that for next year. But I just want to have fun going to games, and there's something I love about the chase and the climb, and that's where they are now, and it feels like you're pursuing something meaningful because you have that core special piece, and it feels real. It feels like, hey, like, you have genuine aspirations of the cup. You know, we would talk about all year, if you don't get one of these top two, you're going to end up like the Minnesota Wild or the Winnipeg Jets, which there are worse things to be than that. But, you know, those teams, they get their heart broken every year. And it's like you can predict it because they just don't have that true, true superstar guy. Even Kirill, as great as he is, he's not McKinnon. He's not McDavid. He's not one of those types of guys. Now the Hawks have one of those.
When are you getting your nine? I know you're not a jersey guy.
Yeah, I'm not a jersey guy. We put a t-shirt out on sale. So I took the Hawks like feather colors.
Sure.
That color scheme, and then put the 4-5-9-13, like the lottery
nice.
Ball.
I
like that. So I'll be wearing that around. It's like a kind of like an inside, like if you know, kind of kind of a shirt. But I'm gonna get something. I'm gonna do something because, you know, it's I really, like, I can't even wait for prospect camp. Like, I'm going to take the week off of work, just sit around in some cold rink in July, watch guys skate around and play hockey. So, a bunch of teenagers. So, because that's where it is right now. Like, it's so exciting to be a Blackhawks fan again. It's going to be fun.
Connor Bedard is coming to Chicago. Hockey is once again relevant.
Big time.
Still got a ways to go.
Well, but that is, like, that energy, it felt like when that hit, it did feel like those cup years, like the way that everybody you know was talking about it. And like,
did your phone just blow? Mine was just blown from people I would not expect.
I got something from Twitter that I had never seen before. I don't know if it's a new feature, but they're like, you're getting too many notifications. Would you like to set up filters? And I'm like, I don't have time for that. Just refresh. but it was because everybody was tweeting, retweeting, liking. It was insane. And same thing with my phone. I got, you know, I replied to people today because I'm like, I can't manage all these right now because everybody is so excited. And there's very few athletes that come along that get everybody's attention. And Bedard's worthy of that distinction.
So we want to let you know, we're going to continue the Hockey Show podcast in and around the June 28th draft. It's on a Wednesday and a Thursday in Nashville. So a couple weeks leading up to that, Chief and I will have another podcast breaking down some of the potential prospects that they're looking at in the first and second round and beyond, some of the strategy they may have going in. Continue to follow Chief. He's all over this team, connected with them, as am I. And we appreciate that... That ESPN 1000 is giving.
I love it here.
The Hockey Show some love, right?
Yeah, I love it here. I love doing the show with UPB. So I'm glad we get to have some exciting things to talk about here in the summer as well.
So that's going to do it for the Hockey Show podcast, Connor Bedard edition. He is coming to Chicago soon. So long.